Thank you. Thank you so much, Hatoum. It's really a delight to be here and to see you again. And just thank you for inviting me. Would you like, is there something that needs to be done about the sound, or is it okay? Okay. Well, today I'm supposed to talk about aging. And I was telling Hatoum as I came in that I recently had a dialogue with Ram Dass, with a video dialogue for the students of the Mehta Institute, where I do some volunteer teaching. And I said, well, Ram Dass, we've been talking about aging for a very long time. he just turned 80 this April. He said, yes, I wrote that book about conscious aging when I was 65, and I didn't know anything. And so we laughed about that. Whoops. And I'll just leave it there, okay. If it's okay. I think it is. So anyway, it's something that if you have worked with that completion process that Hatoum mentioned, you already know that that's can be useful for the completion of life as well as the various stages along the way and the other things. So that's a good preparation. I wanted to start today by sharing a poem that was written by a friend of mine. Oh, maybe 10 years ago she passed away, and she was a good model of aging for me. And she said this: I come to old age as to an unfamiliar land, foreign in its ways, inhospitable to its guests. I find I have packed the wrong things, worn the wrong outfit, studied a language no longer spoken. The time of my arrival, the exact entry point, are mysterious to me. There are some who looked settled here, and that is the strangest thing of all. I want to ask, but I think I know. Are they not inside, surprised and unprepared like me? It's an interesting question, I think, is when, what is that point when we can say we really are arrived or arriving at old age? Hatoum mentioned Zaman Schachter, who wrote a wonderful book on age, from aging to saging. And that was, 10 years ago, was it? Something like that. And he too said that he knows a whole lot more now than he did then. I think he was in his 70s when he wrote it, and now he's in his 80s. So it's an ongoing process. And really, in my own experience, personally, I felt that, and I still see it in other people, that you can be in denial about aging pretty much through your 60s. But once you hit 70, you kind of have to acknowledge that maybe this is old age, coming along anyway. If it's, and you're entering a different phase of life. And for me, certainly a big change was when I decided to close my private practice and be retired in that regard. I'm still very busy doing all kinds of things, being on nonprofit boards and doing all kinds of wonderful activities, and no trouble filling up the time. Somehow, work or whatever expands to fill the time available. So I still have trouble getting around to doing the projects that I really want to do and so forth. What happened for me was after 30-some years of loving my work, just really loving my private practice and working with individuals, and because I always did some teaching and some, I felt that private practice really nourished my teaching and vice versa. But it was though I reached a place where I felt I had done it enough. And it just was, and I realized that if I didn't put a stake in the ground and say, I'm going to retire, this could go on indefinitely. And I didn't want to be like Joe Henderson, who went on until he was over 100 seeing people until somebody at the Jung Institute told him it was time to stop. Because someone had said, well, I had asked one of his clients, well, do you go for you or for him? So I thought, well, you know, this, I was feeling inside that I just didn't look forward to rushing off to the office in the morning to be there by 8 o'clock, you know. And it was really a very important and significant decision for me to close the office I'd been in for 35 years. And it was a nice place, and I liked it all that time, but it was time to move on. And the result for me was a wonderful sense of liberation, a sense of freedom, a sense of not having to carry the responsibilities that I carried when I was formally doing that work. Because, I mean, I just do it non-professionally. You know? I mean, there are always people to talk to, and we're always involved in that work of helping each other along, you know, on the path, wherever, whatever we're formally doing in the world. So it was, the timing felt right for me, and so I'm grateful that it was completely an inner prompting. And I'm very grateful for having had work during my life that had heart and meaning for me. And it wasn't anything that I had ever planned, because I really had to get my ducks in a row when I got divorced and had to really earn a living and support my children and so forth. So I'm very grateful that it worked out, that I was able to do that. And the thing that I'm so grateful for now is that I have occasion to meet so many people who are doing such good work in the world. I've just been privileged to work with the Fetzer Institute for the last 15 years, and that has exposed me to so many people doing marvelous work in the world. It's really inspiring. So one of the things that I really recommend, well, at any stage of life, but particularly in aging, is to practice gratitude, because gratitude is such a wonderful way of kind of shifting attention to all the things that have come along in this world that we didn't plan, all the things that have allowed us to be here now, and all the things that are given. What a privilege it is to be here today in this beautiful place with wonderful teachers, and to be with Atum and with each other. You know, it's just to remember how fortunate we are, and to shift attention to from the things that aren't working to the things that have worked for us in our lives. What is it that has been truly liberating for us in some way that has allowed us to be on the spiritual path? How did we manage to get there, get here? So anyway, there was another little poem from Rumi that I wanted to share at the beginning. Why does a date palm lose its leaves in autumn? Why does every beautiful face grow in old age, wrinkled like the back of a Libyan lizard? They put on borrowed robes and pretend they were theirs. I take the beautiful clothes back so that you will learn the robe of appearance is only a loan. Your lamp was lit from another light. All God wants is your gratitude for that. So in a way, I think we need to remember that all of life is a learning opportunity, including old age. And it's the process of awakening goes on and on, just like the process of development. I've always been interested in developmental psychology and development on the spiritual path and unfolding and really evolution in the sense we're all participating in that, consciously or unconsciously, in one way or another. We all contribute to to the whole. We're all connected. And so I wanted to touch on some of the things that maybe I could say about the process of awakening, which is timeless. And one book that has that I have found very helpful in my understanding of the evolution of faith is James Fowler's Stages of Faith, and he talks about the earliest stages when we take things literally, and then the stages where we individuate and maybe reject the spiritual teachings or religions of our childhood and start questioning everything, and then a more existential stage where you really begin to see that there are many dimensions that are significant for to explore, which are not necessarily about the surface of what you get from going to your continuing the tradition of your childhood. But his final stage, he calls it a universalizing faith, and he says the universalizing faith is free from ideological shackles. And I love that phrase. So I really think of awakening as something that liberates us. When we wake up, we are free from ideological shackles. And it doesn't mean that we don't appreciate the teachings that have come to us from all the traditions, because every tradition has an esoteric side. Every tradition has the more hidden teachings that lead to the mystical experience. But the exoteric, which is kind of like the public face, doesn't really take you there necessarily, so that you have to dig deeper. And in some way, you can only do it if you go inside yourself. You know, you're not going to get it from out there. And it may be that at first we're drawn to teachings and readings and writings, but ultimately, if we don't connect it to our own inner work and our inner experience, it remains something that is separate from us. And the real work, I believe, is in the inner work. So, and ultimately, I suppose we can recognize that the inner and the outer are the same, and they reflect each other. But most of us had to pay attention to the inner work because we don't get that in our educational system. We usually focus so much, there's so much to learn about the world and what we need to know, that we tend to neglect the inner work sometimes until midlife. So I would say that to awaken is to be free from ideological shackles. And to awaken is to be without anxiety about imperfection. Because, you know, it's as though when we... I remember one of my teachers said to me, "You're still trying so hard to be to do the right thing." And I thought, well, I guess that's true. And I've tried to relax a little over the years. And maybe we can be more... These obviously have a resonance for me in my experience. But really, to be without anxiety about our imperfections. And for me, aging is definitely something that means coming to terms with my limitations. I think that accepting my limitations, which show up daily one way or another, that also helps me come to terms with other people's limitations. And we all have them in one way or another. And so I think that the limitation things, let's see what I had here. Yeah, this came from another friend of mine who has also died, but when she was in her 80s, she wrote a lovely little book. And this is what she had to say. Saying the nevers. It's a hard word, never. Never say never. That's wrong. We need to say it now. Yes, say them all, because someday, and maybe, and perhaps, keep us dangling over into tomorrows, using up our time, taking up precious space, pining over yesterday, longing for another chance at youth, pretending away the years, wastes whatever we have left to spend. Never sweeps clean, never leaves room for something else. I'll never be young again. Means we get to be older, even old. We've never done that before. It's a new adventure. No, says the youngster inside us. Try it out, says the adventurer. Always ready for a different experience. So I would like to invite you to just turn to a partner next to you and think about the nevers that you might be willing to say. And just share the nevers for just a few minutes. Which are the ones that you can really recognize for yourself? I'll give you one to start on. I'll never wear a bikini again. Willing to share any significant nevers that came up for you, something that really touched you? Yes.
Oh, never get in person to thank my parents.
Thank you.
I will never in person get to thank my parents.
Others?
I will never see my children in their old age.
That's one that I can resonate to. I'll never see my grandchildren grow up or, you know, come into their full maturity. Yes.
I'll never turn heads like I did in my 20s.
Because you, in a sense, you know, it occurs to me that you turn heads now because you reveal more of your inner self. And before it was superficial, now it's much deeper. Yeah. I think there's a quote from Goethe that says something about that aging is about giving up appearances. Others? Thank you. Yeah. Anyone else? There must be some others.
I'll never have perfect eyesight without glasses.
All right. Yes. Yes.
I will never run a marathon.
Okay.
I'll never be a rocket.
That's really, you know, we laugh, but there are a lot of broken, a lot of dreams that we've had to let go of along the way. Yes.
I will never be able to undo the past.
Yeah. Yeah. But we can heal the past and release it. And that's fine. It's enough to heal the past and let it go, and so that you can be free to be here now. You know, because you're not a prisoner of your past. So it's like really allowing room to be here now. Yeah. Or as Ram Dass' latest book is now, Be Love Now. anybody else? Let me share some from here, is that in addition to I'll never be young again, I'll never have that perfect body, I'll never know all there is to know. I'll never do all I meant to do. I'll never see all I wanted to see. I'll never be famous. I'll never be first. I'll never be a hero. And so forth and so on. You know, it's, we all have a lot of nevers that we need to acknowledge to ourselves because they're very liberating. So that's just one of the keys, I think, to being able to live more fully, so that we're not holding on to old ideas that, of what we thought we wanted. And it is a journey, as we know. Recently, it was just Nancy reminded me of this that I'd like to share with you, is that I've been thinking of life in four stages. The first stage is one of magic. You know, the world seems like magic, and there's so many things to discover and so many things that just we don't know how they work, and we believe in magic. And then comes a period of mastery. And the young adult generally rejects magic. And there's the disenchantment of the world, you know. And because it's really important to gain a degree of mastery in this world so you can make your way, and find a way to survive and do what needs to be done. So you have to find some work in the world or some relationships and so forth. It's a period of gaining some sense of mastery in your life. And then after that, we begin to realize that the satisfaction of ego goals is never fully satisfying. Because no matter how much money you make or how many important things you do, there's still a sense of that it's never enough. Or you know that the next car or the next house is not going to make you happy. You still may think that the next relationship will make you happy. But that doesn't seem to work either, you know. Finally, you have to come back to being with yourself, whether you're in a relationship or not in a relationship. You're still having to make friends with yourself or accept yourself or whatever. You're still there. What is it, John Kabat-Zinn's book about wherever you go, there you are? And so then in midlife, we start thinking about what's meaningful. So it's from magic to mastery to meaning. And we begin to search for meaning. What really matters? What does the soul long for? What really makes a difference? And that's often the time when we begin to, you know, find a spiritual path. And it may or may not be related to the spiritual path that we glimpsed in the stage of magic, but we begin to see that there are things that are mysterious and invisible, that the visible world is just the surface of things, and that the invisible world, the world of thoughts and feelings and connections and the depth of things, the things that are truly meaningful, are invisible. And so, in addition to a certain degree of mastery, we also need to find something that gives our life heart and meaning. And finally, in the fourth stage, is one of mystery. And I think if we're lucky, the search for meaning will lead us to a place of mystery. We realize that no matter how much we learn, and how much we know, and how much we understand, there's always more. And there is the great mystery. Former friend who passed away recently, Rabbi Alan Liu, used to say, God is just another word for mystery. And we need to make friends with mystery, with the great mystery, particularly as our lives come to a close, as we approach the end of life. Houston Smith, in his autobiography, one of his last lines says, we're born in mystery, we live in mystery, and we die in mystery. And the mysterious, it's as though the beginnings and endings are always mysterious in our lives. I think the birth of grandchildren for me was much more mysterious than the birth of my own children. I mean, it was as though I was so busy trying to keep it all together and do the right thing when my children were born. I didn't have time to ponder the mystery. And yet, you know, it's only in retrospect that I can see the mystery of it all. And being able to witness my children having children has been a deepening of that mystery. And also being present at anybody's death is a great opening to mystery. It's a lot of times we think that a close encounter with death, our own death or somebody else's death, is one of the things that opens the door to spiritual questions and issues in life. It can be a turning point for anyone, particularly if it's your own death, you know, and you really have been close to it, then you begin to see that there is always, the mystery is totally ineffable and totally has, you can never come to the end of it. There's a lovely story about Isaac Newton, who said at the end of his life, I've been as a little child playing on the seashore, finding ever, always one brighter pebble, and all around me the great ocean of truth lay undiscovered. And so it's one of those things that we never get to the bottom of it. So we might as well make friends with it, because it's been there all along, even if we haven't always been aware of it. So, to awaken, there's another thing I'd like to say about that. To awaken is to see through illusions, to become, see through illusions, to become aware of Maya. You know, they say Maya has three powers: the power of manifestation, the power of concealment, and the power of revelation. So that it can conceal or reveal the truth. And that's, and it's our job to sort out the truth from illusions, because we all have our own private illusions as much as the collective illusions that we all share. So I think making that distinction is useful. And if we are on a spiritual path, it has something to do with seeking truth or trying to recognize the truth, because I think truth is recognized, not learned. And that you know it when you recognize it, when you see it. You know, it doesn't matter how much you know about anything. There's something inside that recognizes truth. So, but sorting out truth from illusion is not always easy. And, you know, there's a lot of work and research on the benefit of positive illusions, that you really tend to do better in the world if you have positive illusions rather than negative illusions about yourself. So I don't think we're ever free of illusions, but it helps to remember that what we really need is to recognize truth for ourselves and wherever we are, at whatever stage of life. And the part, what goes along with that is letting things, to awaken is to let things be as they are. Not trying to fix things, not trying to make things better. And I think that particularly those of us in the helping professions are really very committed to improvement. I mean, you know, we want people to get better. We want to relieve suffering. And there's a whole, you know, ideal of service, which is one of the better motivations in our lives. And it certainly does contribute to a sense of well-being and a sense of meaningful work. And so it's not to disparage it in any way, but to remember that sometimes being of service involves letting things be as they are. In the last 10 years or so, I've been working with Frank Ostaseski, who was the founder of the Zen Hospice Center, and he started this program for the Mehta Institute, which is training counselors who are working with people at the end of life. And he has five precepts that he talks about, which I think are really useful for all of us. And the first one is to welcome everything and push away nothing. And these are not just for those who are working at the end of life, but for all of us every day. To welcome everything and push away nothing. No matter what's happening, it's part of letting things be as they are. And then whatever, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, bring your whole self to the experience. Bring your whole self to the experience. And the last thing you want to do if you're attending somebody who's dying is to try to fix things. No. Just your willingness to be there is what counts. Your willingness to be fully present without trying to change anything. The next one of those precepts is don't wait. And that's so relevant for aging. Don't wait for whatever you think is going to happen next or not going to happen. Do what you can right now. Because there's no point in putting it off. You don't know how much time you have. I don't know how much time I have. You know, as we get older, things happen unexpectedly. And it contributes to a feeling of vulnerability. You just don't know what's going to happen next. And as they say, when people of a certain age get together, the first thing they do is have an organ recital. Because, you know, as we get older, if it's not one thing, it's another. You know? There's always something going on. Something that you don't know whether it's going to, you know, keep on happening or not. And a couple of things for me. One was that I suddenly was feeling just fine. And then I suddenly experienced this thing going on with my eyes, and I had to have emergency eye surgery for a tear in the retina. Well, that was a shock because I was feeling totally wonderful, and then I realized, you know, yeah, I might go blind. Maybe this had to be attended to, and I thought, well, you know, what happens if I'm traveling or doing whatever, and you just don't know, you know, and if it's not one thing, it's another. And whether one person may have issues with their heart or with their physical being, but they're unexpected things, and these things happen. I mean, one thing my husband and I were saying the other day, gee, somebody else, a friend of ours, was turning 80, and said, our friends are all getting older. And And that's what it, often we see it that way, you know. It's all those people that we that used to be young, they're aging. It's much easier to see it out there than when you look in the mirror, or you can avoid looking in the mirror, you know, whatever it is. Anyway, back to one of those five precepts. Oh, I love this one. Is don't wait, and then find a place of rest in the midst of things. Find a place of rest in the midst of things. One of my favorite affirmations is, I rest in God. It's kind of making friends with God again. You know, it's like whatever, in my experience, in my life, when I was in college, the death of God was very much in the air. You know, and Nietzsche was very popular, and I was into existentialism and so forth. And then suddenly I had this blinding insight into the totally obvious. I said, there's nothing the matter with God. It's our concepts of God that are a problem. So if we can recognize that the great mystery is always there, whatever name we give it, and our concepts about it can be very limited, very restrictive, and rather irrelevant, really. So to think about letting our concepts go is much more liberating than wrestling with our whatever our early concepts of God were about. To be able to find a place of rest in the midst of things, wherever you are, wherever you go, because it's really only about your being at peace with yourself. And finally, one that I just love, and that is, and this goes back to the years of when I was doing Zen meditation, is cultivate don't know mind. Cultivate don't know mind. It's kind of like entering the cloud of unknowing. You know, that's the willingness to not know. The willingness to not have it all figured out. And certainly I've certainly been enamored of understanding. I like to understand. When I think about all those years I spent sitting in my office, I always wanted to understand people and understand what was going on with them, understand how things could be shifted and changed and so forth. And I guess that's what led me to study psychology. But it's been a sense of there's also a place for cultivating don't know mind, because you're never going to understand it all. At least that's my conclusion. So to awaken is part of being awake, is to cultivate don't know mind. I'd like to do a brief, another brief reflection exercise before we, and then after we'll take a short break before we go into the second half of our morning, which will have a little more experiential work. I want to share something that comes from Ananda Mahima. And bear with me for my disorganized notes. Paramahansa Yogananda once asked Sri Ananda Mahima to tell him something of her life. Father, there is little to tell. My consciousness has never been associated with this temporary body. Before I came on this earth, Father, I was the same. I grew into womanhood, but still, I was the same. When the family in which I had been born made arrangements to have this body married, I was the same. And Father, in front of you now, I am the same. Even afterwards, though the dance of creation changes around me in the hall of eternity, I shall be the same. So I'd like to invite you to close your eyes for a moment. And take a moment to pay attention to your breathing, allowing your body to relax, being aware of any extra work going on in your body that you don't need right now. Just notice any body sensations that are present for you at this moment and let them be. And notice any feelings that are present for you at this moment. Any feelings pertaining to something in the past, or something that might or might not happen in the future. Just notice them and let them be. And be aware of any thoughts that are going through your mind. Again, without trying to hold on to them and without trying to push them away, just letting them be. And be aware of how it feels to be you at this moment. And I'd like you to think about a long time. Think about a very, very long time. Think about a time that's even longer than that. And double that amount of time. And double it again. And think about eternity. And from that perspective, what are you? What are you? What are you? And bringing your awareness back being in this body, in this room, in this place. Whenever you're ready, you can open your eyes. I'd like you to take a couple of minutes to share with someone near you whatever images came up for you or what happened for you in that experience. Well, I'd like to hear from anyone who's willing to share what came up for you.
I ended up realizing that I was only a piece of cosmic dust and holding light.
All right. Thank you. That what?
That the little dot did make.
Yeah.
A shard of light.
Thank you.
I just became energy, so it didn't matter how big you went.
Okay. Yeah. Yes? Yes.
Relieved of responsibility.
Ah. So it was freeing in that way. Yes.
It was the creative energy that came from before, and it's just moving through, and it was just keep moving.
Thank you. Let's see, there and then there. Yeah.
Yeah, I had these words up here, which were, "I am that I shall be," and they were words that I recognized, interestingly enough, in the conversation I had with a friend. We were talking about the word Yahweh, normally translated as "I am that I am," and I read this wonderful article where it can equally be known as "I shall be that I shall be," which I really like because it has a dynamic nature to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then my friend observed, so therefore it's equally valid to say "I am that I shall be," which I just love. It just sort of takes you into the transcendent.
It combines the two, yeah. Thank you.
I like not being able to think about time.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I did not know who I was, and that was also enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. Okay, thank you. Yes.
If the Big Bang were like someone threw a rock in the ocean, and like a moment when one of those ripples passes through, and a moment of it passing.
Yeah. Well, it kind of puts things in perspective. So maybe we should take a minute to come back to a more here and now perspective. For the second half of our morning, after we have a little break, I want to start with quoting a poem from Hafiz that says, "The subject for tonight is love, and for tomorrow night as well." As a matter of fact, I can think of no better subject to talk about until we all die. So I know I've always appreciated a quote from St. John of the Cross, who says that everyone in life must cross the river of suffering, and the boat that takes you across is love. And that the way the soul ascends to union with God is by a secret stair, which is love. So that's just a kind of a seed planting for what we may work with in the second half of this morning. But now I think it would be good to take maybe a 10-minute break. And then come back together again.